Hello and welcome to recording number 12 of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is October 30th, 2021. All right, well, we're reading the story, A Revel in Rel Mord, which is the sequel to The Weird Occurrence in Odd Alley. Now, in the story so far, Gord Chert, Pincus the Azure, which is a kind of ogre magi from a different universe, and Lord Mayhel, who is a foppish lord of Nyrond, they've been put on a quest, and they are getting the information as they go. And so far, they've come to this town in the Natmarsh. They had a little encounter with bandits, and after killing the bandit leader, Gord has enlisted the surviving bandits as his henchmen. Now, they've come to this town in Natmarsh called Grimmelshalken or something. But anyway, it's a town that's like a bandit's paradise. And it's strangely inhabited with a lot of what they thought were beautiful women, but have turned out to be witches, night hags, Annis, a shelly coat, various of these horrible creatures who have taken the form of beautiful women and are feeding on, I guess, the bandits who come to this town. Now, Gord and Chert and, you know, took a, did not want to become the food for these night hags and such. And so Gord was able to see through the illusion because of his magic sword. And they have taken a witch hostage. And it looks like the witch is probably a very powerful one, seems to be in control of the situation. So they've gone upstairs and they are discussing the situation, Gord and this witch. And so we're on page 142. Of Knight Errant, and I'm going to start at the first paragraph. I know we'd read it last time. Things, unfortunately, between technical problems and things going on here, that was a very short recording and very disrupted. It may have to be redone, I don't know. But we're going to just keep going. So this is recording 11, page 142, first paragraph. Ah, rejection doesn't get any easier with age now, does it? The old crone mused sadly. Ah, well, she sighed and poured two stiff drinks into a pair of pewter goblets on the sideboard, took a swig from each to demonstrate neither was drugged or poisoned, and then dropped glumly down on the bed. Gord sat stiffly on a three-legged stool, ignoring the proffered drink she held in front of him. After all, she was a witch. There were many poisons she could use to do away with a mortal that would not affect her in the least. The witch shrugged when Gord failed to reach out for the drink, and then quickly downed the contents of both goblets. They call it white lightning on the plain where where the stuff's made, the crone said with an appreciative sigh after draining her vessel. Then she continued in another vein. Why don't we begin by addressing the question of why you and your chums have ruined our little scam here? We had no choice, Gord said quickly. We're under enthrallment in Geas, and we had to come here. Let's begin at the beginning, Sonny, and go until the end comes, the witch said shortly. I don't like this whole business any more than you do. Unless maybe you'd like the two of us to get it on. No thanks. I'll settle for spending the time explaining, Gord countered. Here's the story. The young thief spent the next hour relating the details of their adventure from Weird Way to Castle Physiac. Ugger that old bastard Boffley and his crony Fompton, too, the witch said vehemently. By the way, the name's Quodild, she said, extending her hand. Gord took it cautiously. The witch continued, "They set you up, you boys up, and the Grand Count and the King too, or else I ain't got warts. But the test, nothing more than a farce," the crone nearly screamed. "A nasty mean way to get back at me for my having cleverly outwitted that pious old fart and a sexy old faker pal the last couple of times we've had a contest, so to speak. You don't have a proper, you don't have a prayer of succeeding, unless," her voice trailed off. Ward was confused. "You know good priest Boffley and court wizard Fompton well enough to engage in a contest. Know 'em? We grew up together, the three of us did, about 100 years back. That namby-pamby Boffley decided to follow the straight and narrow, as they say. Matched his spine and mind. He. Old Fompy, why, he never was any great shakes at spinning a deomer either. I always wondered how he managed to flummox the Grand Count into appointing him court wizard. But then again, those physiacs were never known for their brains." "What are we to do then?" Gord asked the witch earnestly. Quodild drew Gord closer and began to speak rapidly in a low tone. The young thief nodded now and again, then slapped his knee and gave a loud laugh. "That's wonderful," he exclaimed. "How can we repay you?" Realizing a potential error of serious magnitude, Gord drew back, but the witch only cackled lewdly and said, "No time for that now, handsome. You and your chums have to set things right here, then get back to Castle Physiac to prove you passed their silly test. Maybe you and I can get together some other time." "I'll be sure and drop in if I'm ever in the neighborhood again," Gord volunteered. "That'll do," Quodild said with a leer. "I could apply a little geas if I own to make certain of it." "No need for that," Gord said quickly. "We'd just be wasting valuable time. The sooner we get going, the sooner Boffley and Fompton will get what's coming to them. You are anxious to see that happen, aren't you?" "Let's get going," the witch cackled excitedly. "But you'd better make sure." Yeah, don't worry," Gord said quickly. Quotadild gave him what she imagined to be a serious look. "You seem weary. You seem to be an honest sort," she said. "And anyway, no one can resist my charm forever. I've got all the time in the world to wait for you to show up and pay your debt." And at that, the crone cackled madly, sending chills up and down the young rogue's spine. The witch cast a spell, and suddenly an ancient coffer appeared on the table before her. She rummaged She rummaged around in the old trunk until she found the three objects she was looking for. After handing them to Gord, she took him by the arm and steered him downstairs. Chert and the former bandits were standing uncomfortably by the front door, weapons drawn and ready, surrounded by seemingly beautiful girls who mocked them and urged the employment of their of other sorts of weapons than those of steel. From the looks on the men's faces, it was evident that they were having a hard time believing that these lovely lasses were actually magically guised witches and hags, attempting to lure them to a most terrible fate. Pincus sat alone at a small corner table, pouting. He had been unable or unwilling to choose one of his two admirers over the other, and he chose now, and he was now being shunned by both of the hags. Ord and the rest of the humans saw them as stunning-looking doxies, but Picus, thanks to his innate ogreish powers of resistance to magic, still saw their true forms and lusted and lamented. Ord had to laugh. "Let's go, lads," the young thief called merrily to his comrades when he managed to regain his breath and composure. "Our quest is done, and we must now hie back to Castle Physiac and the Grand Count." That bit of news delighted Chert and the men-at-arms. Zimp boomed out, "Hooray for Captain Gord. I knew he'd do it." The other outlaws stared at Quodild, shook their heads, gazed at Gord admiringly, and raised a hurrah. Chert pounded Gord on the back. "Nice going, pal. Sometimes you're rather useful to have around." Blushing and sputtering in a mixture of embarrassment and outrage at all this praise, Gord was pushed by the witch and pulled by his companions toward the open door. Pincus had already stumped through it and was heading off in high dudgeon through it, and was just as the young thief was about to be forced out, however, he realized that something was amiss. "Wait," he shouted, and the shoving and tugging stopped. "Where is Lord Mayhill? We can't go on without help, without him." Amid cries of "Bugger the fop, who needs him, and let him earn his keep here as a bum boy," Gord walked back into the tavern. "Where's the sec of Du Yoop?" he demanded of Quodild. "Roasted, if I know," she replied laconically. "Oh, not, I forgot all about him. I saw him going above with a tart for a while," Chert volunteered. Gord, whose look was one of absolute horror, did not wait for Chert to finish his sentence. He took the stairs three at a time. His comrades all pounding after him. In a moment, they found a room with a closed door and burst in without knocking. "Ock," said Lord Mayhill, hastily drawing on his underdrawers. "Eek," screamed a sultry feminine voice. As satin sheets were pulled quickly over a raven-tressed face of exquisite beauty. "That's a witch or hag," Gord shouted at the furious nobleman. "Nonsense," he retorted hotly while scurrying to don hose and doublet. "Double nonce," still Qualdeld added. "That happens to be my own dear daughter, Dulcia, who, despite my half of her parentage, is neither witch nor hag." So saying, she jerked the bedclothes down to reveal the girl's pale and lovely face. "Your daughter," Mayhill stammered, his face turning ghastly pale. "How dare you carry on with a dullard like that?" the witch demanded, ignoring him and addressing her offspring. Dullard, Mayhill puffed with weak indignation. He was still terrified, but of course could not let the insult pass. "But, mother dearest, I'm in love with Lord Mayhill. From the moment I saw him, I knew he was a man for me," the delicious young beauty replied in pleading tones. No accounting for some people's taste, Chert whispered to Gord. Maybe she is more like her mother when she wakes up in the morning than she is the beauty we see before us now, Gord whispered back, jabbing his friend in the side with an elbow. The two of them shook with suppressed laughter. Besides, he promised to marry me, Qualdild's daughter whined. Qualdild was rocked back on her heels. Marry you? He promised to marry you. Now that's wonderful news indeed, my sweet little flower. Marry, the Sek of Dobayuk echoed. But before he could say another word, Qualdild spun around to face him before. Her beady eyes expressing unmistakable menace. You know it, you smell-smock jackanapes. If the word of a nobleman of the House of Physiac isn't sufficient, and the Grand Count shall... shall hear about that, I assure you. Then perhaps the sting of my own powers will be enough to make you hold to your troth, she concluded with a hiss as she took a step toward the trembling Mayhel. Nay, nay, contain thine ire, good witch. Of certes I mean to keep my pledge. Marry your daughter, he ended lamely, swallowing hard and nearly choking. It's settled then, Qualdild said, matter-of-factly. The banns will be posted next week, and the wedding will take place in Relmord in 1 month's time. Oh, my sweet little daughter, she said, turning once again to the happily bouncing girl. He does not deserve such a treasure, but I am sure he will do everything possible to make you happy. The look she shot over her shoulder at Lord Mayhel left no doubt about the intended consequences if he failed to do just that, and the Nirondel nobleman shook even more than before as he nodded a dumb affirmation of the statement. Good, the ancient head witch of Grimalkinsham said with pleasure. Now you can all be on your way. I'm certain your enemy... Now you can all be on your way. I'm certain your renowned uncle, Lord Physiac, will wish to meet your bride-to-be as soon as possible. Get up, girl, and get your pretty arse moving. We haven't got all night. All right, break. So, yes, this is a very good story for Halloween and Mischief Night. And as Chris says, witches and hags are a race of monster and not a type of human. Yes, not witches per se.
It seems to be what they were saying, like when they were talking about our daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, because her daughter seems to be half human. And Gygax seemed to be making the witch into a kind of monster. And yet I remember there was a witch character class in Dragon Magazine. So yes, it's very strange what he's doing right here. It seems like now, all right, the Night Hags, the Green Hags, the Annis, they're all part of the same grouping, the same kind of a genus there, where they're all hags of some sort. And the Shelly Coat, I guess, is a version too. But again, I think it was posted something about the Shelly Coat last time. But the witch now seems to be part of that business with the hags, rather than a character class. I personally have the witch as a character class.
So yeah, it makes sense to me.
And there was a Dragon magazine article that had the witch character class in it. So that was a, you know, big bit of action. There really wasn't much lore except that this Quodild, she says she grew up with Fompton and Balfi. Bofley. So we have the court wizard of the Grand Count of Physia, who is this Fompton. And we have is a high priest there. I think that's who Bofley is a high priest of somebody.
And yeah, then one was a wizard and one was a cleric.
Yeah. And so, you know, we now have them as... Now, this whole thing is very strange, you know, with the Physiac and the Grand Count and business. But, you know, at this time, there was very, very little information on Nyrond because Sargent hadn't done all that detail work yet. So this is really the first that we're seeing of named... a named area controlled by a Grand Count and the name of Physiac. And, you know, so we're really seeing this part of Nyrond that was undetailed up until this story. So we get all that. Now, what's very strange then, did she start out as a human 100 years ago and become a witch and then is like a night hag? Or did she start out as a witch and both Bofley and Fompton grew up with her? It's, you know, it's a very strange situation that Gygax is describing right here. Now, this is a humorous story, so I don't think, you know, we're heavily worried about the details.
Right.
Now, as is commented here, you know, the comment is that the nomenclature... is a night hag might be called a witch. I don't think so. I think he definitely, and in this story at least, I think he is definitely breaking things up so that the witch and the night hag, the anise, the green hag, the shelly coat, the whole business with the witch, though, really stands out as not really fitting in. Because everything else is defined in the game, except maybe for Shellycoat, there's write-ups of all these different ones. And I believe, like, these hags are supposed to be, like, devilish rather than, like, demonic creatures. So, you know, right here, so we haven't... We don't get much right here, but like you're saying, there is this material about this Grim Shalkan. And All right. I am going to restart. And be interesting, I'm going to say, if Quoldale's daughter actually does marry a Lord of Nyrond here, this Lord Mayhel, if he happens to be reinstated. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 147 in the final paragraph. Excuse me. An escort of a dozen trolls provided by Quodilda and inspelled to protect the group they were accompanying made the return through the Gnat Marsh, a rapid trip, if uncomfortable, for the other travelers. Nothing worse than the loathsome humanoids cared to trouble their passage, certainly. In no time at all, they bade the insect-infested morass and the accompanying trolls adieu, and then they headed for Castle Physiac at a swift pace, guarded by the ex-bandits, and whatever Diomer quoted the Witch of Grim Malkinsham had placed over them as an aegis. All right, break. So, and that the Aegis. I've known that in the past, but at this moment, I can't give a good definition of what she's saying there. About what do you know what Aegis means? See that? I'm not sure offhand. All right. So,
I think it might be like a Gaius spell. I'll check it out. Another one?
Yeah. Because we've got the enthrallment and the Gaius, as an Aegis. I'm not sure about that word.
A-E-G-I-S?
Yes. Now, one of the things I wanted to bring up was, it's interesting. I just was reading a story last night, written in the 20s, about this island that was between, I guess, Cuba and Puerto Rico. And the odd thing was that the man came looking for mahogany trees. And so the island had no life on it except the trees. And, you know, some underbrush. It had no animal life. And he had brought netting so that he could sleep. And I think we've all seen mosquito netting. And I just wondered if Gygax doesn't mention it, but you would think that, for the gnat marsh in that area, you would think that you wonder if they have that mosquito netting in the campaign, and whether it's something that, you would definitely bring with you into these swamp-like areas. All right, so Aegis, a device carried by Athena and Zeus. And the modern concept of doing something under one's aegis means doing something under the protection of a powerful, knowledgeable, or benevolent source. Okay. You know, what was funny, what was confusing me is I played World of Warcraft, and I think that they had that aegis as a shield in one of the battles that I was in there, where you're fighting these pseudo-Norse giants.
I remember that.
Yeah, you're in this hall, and there's this, Odin has this... I think it's Odin, and he has got this aegis that this other giant's trying to claim, and you fight him for it. So, but that's, it's a shield, it's a covering, it's a protection. So that makes sense. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 148 and the second paragraph down. The ogre Magus was silent and stony-faced. Lord Mahel altered between exuberance at having lived through the quest and despair over his coming nuptials. Gordon Chirk kept a close watch on the nobleman, however, as did the newly created men-at-arms, so he had no opportunity to attempt escape. As they rode, Gord informed the others about the witch Quodil's revelations and the plan he had agreed upon with her. "I think the best part of this quest is about to begin," Chirk explained happily. The others heartily agreed. Even Mael's mood seemed to brighten a bit. All right, now I'm breaking right here. I just feel like I missed something. Like the quest, they're under an enthrallment and Aegis to do something. And yet, I don't think that was ever revealed. I mean, Quodild says that it was a scam, but they were being compelled. The spell was real. They were actually being compelled to follow this course, and they would get revelations of information. And yet, after this encounter, I don't know. I just kind of feel like that, you know, that didn't end correctly. Like I was, maybe I missed it. I'm a little.
Oh, it's kind of problematic because it was never revealed what it was. So if it was just to go to those hags and hang out with them for a while and do something, whatever they wanted, then maybe it was technically completed. I mean, you can only guess.
Yeah. All right. Good. It's not just me. So I'm a little groggy today. So I thought maybe I'd miss something here because it just feels like we get the witch's revelation, but we don't get anything about what Prompton and Boffley's quest actually was. We're never told. All right, and it seems like maybe it was to kill her or inconvenience her or get themselves killed. I don't know. All right, I'm going to continue. It's page 148. and it is the fifth paragraph from the end. The whole party arrived safe and sound back at the mighty fortress of the Grand Count in short order. The Major Domo met them at the gates of the castle and brought them directly to the Grand Count of Fizeac without ado. "You have returned, nephew," Lord Fizeac said dryly. "Therefore, I assume that you have somehow managed to succeed, despite the odds against it. You have found new respect in my eyes." He gazed wonderingly at Mahel. "It's all his fault," the young sex said, pointing an accusing finger at Gord. This puzzled the count. "What are you talking about?" he demanded. Mahel didn't catch the tone of his uncle's voice, for he was filled with nothing but his own problems. "This knave, dear nuncle, made me do the whole terrible thing, from the awful ride to the filthy swamp, to agree to marry this common troll." That was too much for the gray-bearded Grand Count. Just a moment, he said in a steely tone, before the nobleman could relate more in his whining voice. "We will hear this from Master Gord of Greyhawk, alone. But, uncle, this lying knave is a rogue and a scoundrel. He'll out!" Armored guardsmen appeared to carry out the command. They had to drag the Sek of Du Yup bodily from the chamber as he kicked and pleaded to no avail. Chert, Pincus, and the others went quietly. Gord bowed when Lord Fizeac demanded an accounting of events. In rapid succession he related just what had taken place, stage by stage, as the four went to Natmarsh, fought the bandits, made men-at-arms of those who surrendered, and so forth. He did not mention the ongoing rivalry between the witch Quodild and Fizeac's priest and wizard. Neither did Gord bring up what the witch had given him, except to present a small crystal flask. As he finished his tale, he brought the flask forth with a flourish, saying, "And this, your illustrious lordship, is a special gift from Witch Quodild. She assures you it will resolve all questions regarding succession to headship of Fizeac." "Quaff a small portion," the Grand Count commanded. He watched Gord with an unwavering gaze as the young thief complied. After several minutes without any apparent ill effects, Lord Fizeac took the flask and tucked it into his girdle. "Well done, Master Gord. I know what Quodild is aiming at by this. I only doubted her sincerity, as her daughter is about to marry that doltish nephew of mine. You know, I suspected that the old hag might want have designs of greatness for Dulcia, but I should have known better. Quodild is too keen of wit to try to place a dullard or a froth brain upon the seat of this grand county." Gord nodded, not fully understanding, but wise enough to know when to remain silent. The Grand Count then asked, "The test of you and your associates completed all that was demanded?" "We have, Lord, at your leave. I will deliver to good priest Boffley and wizard Fompton that which I gained from Quodild. Likewise, I bear the prize demanded by them for King Archbold." All right, break. I'm very interested to hear what the prize is. Because one thing and another, this story's actually taken a lot longer to read than, you know, normally would have. When we were just chopping every day through, it's only like a four-part story, but it's been a week or so, and I really don't remember what the prize demanded for King Archibald was. I must have missed that. So the king is acting like he doesn't know that there was an enthrallment in Geas, that the only way for Gord to return and the others is for them to successfully have completed that and therefore ended the Geas and the enthrallment. So it seems strange that, you know, just their appearing here says that they have done what they were needed to do, because they wouldn't have been able to come back otherwise. All right, I'm
going. I missed it too. I mean, I don't remember them saying it. And I do remember them, like when they asked for details, telling them that it would be revealed as they went along. And
I remember that. That's exactly what I remembered. That they were, and I thought it was a bit of a cheat on Gygax's part right there. That you know he wasn't going to tell us, because if he's not telling Gord, he's not telling us. And so at this point, I don't know. I don't know what the prize was supposed to be. I am a little surprised that the Count Physiac here takes the potion and the crystal thing from Gord and actually takes hold of it, although he does know who Quodild and Dulcea are. So, you know, that I think maybe the explanation. But otherwise, it seems very strange that he would take any item coming from a witch. You know, without it, worrying about it being cursed or enchanted or, you know, dangerous to him of some sort. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 150 and the third paragraph down from the top. Lord Physiac sat quietly for a moment, tugging on his lower lip, lost in deep thought. Slowly his features lightened and a twinkle began to light his eyes. He smoothed his face with a calloused hand and spoke in a stately manner. Lord of Greyhawk, you are a commoner no longer. For what you have accomplished, I hereby elevate you to the status of gentleman and esquire to the House of Physiac. Master Chert, I elevate to gentleman as well, and your men-at-arms I pardon for past offensive, and name them yeomen of Physiac. I will instruct them to report to the constable tomorrow to receive assignments in my own army, he said. Thank you, lordship, for your undeserved generosity, responded Gord with sincerity. But there is also a matter of the loot or jewels that were held in safe keeping for Chert and myself. Well, yes, now that you mention those baubles, I do recall something of the matter. We can discuss it further tomorrow after the ceremony, welcoming my nephew back and elevating you and your comrade above your current base positions. Gord wasn't about to be so easily put off by mention of a petty honor. Most gracious, still I remembered your word about receiving those gems when we successfully fulfilled the trial we so recently underwent and sorely suffered. Lord Physiac's countenance was dark, but Gord remained inflexible. When he was unable to make the young thief blink, the Grand Count scowled and shifted uneasily. Very well, after removing sufficient value to assuage the royal displeasure with your lese majesty, replace ruined garments and other finery, and repair damages done here, I believe that a small sum still remains. I shall have the steward of my exchequer account for the whole and give you the exact reckoning on the morrow. How much remains? Gord asked weakly. Lord Physiac gestured dismissal, saying as he did so, Oh, a handsome sum, I assure you, for one of your station. No less than half score of golden orbs, as I recall, along with a considerable balance in Lucky's nobles, and lesser coins. Although Gord nearly fainted from the shock, he managed to stagger from the hall. What's wrong, Gord? Chert asked as he noted his friend's condition. We've been elevated to gentlemen, the young adventurer managed to reply. It must be the joy of such an honor that makes me pale and reeling. The hulking barbarian looked somewhat unconvinced, but said no more. Later that night, Boffley and Fompton arrived at the chamber of the two young men shared. Give us the object needed to complete the test, the good priest of Physiac said in resonant voice, and then we will hear an explanation of all that occurred. "Welcome to our humble quarters," Gord replied. He graciously showed the two to a pair of chairs, bowed, and then presented Goodcrease Boffley with a small, carefully wrapped parcel. Disconcerted, Fompton looked on his associate, as his associate unwrapped the package. Chur, unable to extract any information concerning the statue of their the status of their confiscated treasure, was in ill humor and glowered silently from a reclining position on one of the two cots in the room as the cleric poured the oiled parchment from the box. The container that the wrapping had protected was a finely crafted little coffer of silver and mother of pearl, inlaid in a variety of rich mixed woods to form an object of great beauty. Good priest Boffley was somewhat hesitant, but Fompton was eager. "Get it open, Boffley," he urged his fellow official. "That doesn't fit the description," the cleric said with a small shrug. Puffing out his cheeks and then emitting a little sigh, he hesitated still. "How came you by this lovely little box?" he asked Gord. "I was told there's a vellum square inside, good sir. That relates the whole matter. I am certain it will answer all your questions to the fullest," Gord told him with an ingratiating smile. "Nonetheless, I am troubled," the priest retorted. "You detect for any inspelling, while I seek possible malign power surrounding the coffer." So saying, the cleric began to work a spell to find evil. While the court wizard resignedly went through the ritual for discovery of hidden Diomer, in a few moments both had finished their passes and stood rapidly concentrating on the box. "Not a glimmer, sir, not a glimmer of magic," said Mothdeen. "Not a glimmer of magic," said Fampton. "Nor do I find evil," admitted the priest. With that he opened the container and drew forth the sheet of vellum he found therein. As Boffley took the sheet out, there was a muffled whoosh, and a cloud of bright green dust was blown over the startled faces of both men. Boffley dropped the box, and it broke on the hard flags of the stone floor. Fompton, meanwhile, leapt backward, trying to brush the stuff from his visage. All he succeeded in doing was getting his hands stained vivid green so that they matched his face. Chirp began guffawing at the sight of the green-faced duo, while Gord did his best to appear amazed and shocked. "My good lords," he exclaimed. In Makar, "what has happened here? Are you all right?" Good priest Boffley ignored all, peering intently at the sheet of parchment. "There's more than one way to skin a pair of old coots," he said. "What are you talking about?" the wizard demanded furiously, wondering if his associate had been unhinged by the shock of being stained in brilliant hue of purest vert. All right, break. So there's a comment that, need to reread and listen again to the material and how it would make a very good module. Yes, I think more even than a module that Grim Shalkin makes a nice little interesting town in the village in the center of the Nat Marsh there as like a, you know, like it's an evil town. It's a rogues and a bandits town, And maybe with like definitely that concourse is some kind of secret way to get there. Now, that's not a hard thing for, you know, it could be concealed partly by magic so that it couldn't just be tracked down and only let the bandits in. Now, there is an adventure in there in the fact that you have the hags and the witches and the anus and the Shelley coat and such, who are more than likely eating rogues and bandits. But, you know, it does make it's a setting. So there's an adventure and a setting right there in this material right here. Now, this story's turned out to be much better so far, because at first I thought this was particularly weak. And as we can tell with the vagary of the information, the quest and the GS and the way that they were kind of railroaded into doing this, that I thought was all very weak. But that actually, when they got to the bandits and into the Nat Marsh and then at Grim Schalkensham, that was much, much more interesting. All right. I am going to restart, and it is page 152 and the final paragraph. "Nor do I find evil," admitted the priest. With that, he opened the container and drew forth the sheet of vellum he found therein. As Boffley took the sheet out, there was a muffled whoosh, and a cloud of bright green dust was blown over the startled faces of both men. Boffley dropped the box, and it broke on the hard flags of the stone floor. Fompton, meanwhile, leapt back, trying to brush the stuff from his visage. All he succeeded in doing was getting his hands stained vivid green so that they matched his face. Chirp began guffawing at the sight of the green-faced duo, while Gore did his best to appear amazed and shocked. "My good lords," he exclaimed in mock horror, "what has happened here? Are you still all right?" Good priest Boffley ignored all, peering intently at the sheet of parchment. "There's more than one way to skin a pair of old coots," he said. "What are you talking about?" the wizard demanded furiously, wondering if his associate had been unhinged by the shock of being stained in brilliant hue of purest vert. "I'm reading what is written here, you fool," Boffley shot back to Frompton, "and it is signed Quodild," he added with a rising note of disbelief. "She's done it to us again." The court wizard and the court cleric of Physiac turned in unison toward Gord, terrible things written plainly on their features. Just then there was a single knock. There was a banging of halberts outside the door, and after a single knock, the strutting Lord Prepon entered and unknowingly interposed himself between Buffy and between Boffley and Fompton and the object of their revenge. "On your feet," the Grand Count of Physiac comes to honor you with his presence," a popinjay proclaimed boldly. Then, as he turned slightly to be in better position, for to be noticed by all entering, he got a look at the green-faced pair. "Yow," he squawked. Trying to get his feet into running motion while holding himself erect by grasping the door. "Be silent and stop trying to run away," the cleric commanded. A now speechless Prepon still thrashed his feet wildly. "Be still," the cleric thundered. Crepin stood motionless, mouth open. You utter imbecile, Fompton said, forgetting in the heat of the moment just who the new object of his anger was. I am court wizard Fompton, and this is good priest Boffley. Ignore the momentary discoloration. Ignore the momentary discoloration that obscures our otherwise handsome features, and close that door immediately. Crepin's mouth managed to open and shut several times. Then he stammered, I cannot, wizard Fompton and good priest Boffley. Lord Physiac even now enters this room. With that, the Grand Count himself stepped into the chamber. What is all this, he asked, seeing the barbarian hillman collapsed in helpless mirth, and Gord holding his sides with laughter. Then he got a look at his two grand officials and began chuckling. The whole point wasn't so infamous. The hole was so infectious that even the stuffy little Prepin was soon giggling too. Fitzhugh said, got a look at his two grand officials and began chuckling. The hole was so infectious that even the stuffy little Prepin was soon giggling too. Finally, wiping tears of laughter from his eyes, Lord Physiac said, so this time Quaddled has definitely paid you back. It would appear so on the face of it, Fompton admitted. Awfully drew himself up and said haughtily, I shall have this silly stuff removed in minutes, my lord, and then we shall see who has gotten what. Boffley drew himself up and said haughtily, I shall have this silly stuff removed in minutes, my lord, and then we shall see who has gotten whom. Enough of your foolery. I am no longer amused with buffoonery and tricks of this sort. I command you both to set aside this petty squabble with Quodild and prepare for our upcoming journey to Rel Mord, and forget all lesser matters. The capital. Why does my illustrious lord desire to go there? Awfully said with a bit of remonstration, evident in his questions. If you weren't so busy with your japes, cleric, the Grand Count said icily, you would be aware that our beloved nephew, Lord Mayhal, is betrothed to Lady Dulcia of Grim Malkinsham. Quodild's brat, the cleric, snapped before he could restrain himself. Your reference to Lady Dulcia, daughter of the Baroness of Grim Malkin, is ill-advised, said Lord Physiac with an icy stare. I will not remind you again that her ladyship is not to be referred to as a brat, ever. She unites the barony with Physiac lands, the Grand Count added meaningfully. Of course, Lord, the deflated priest said humbly. He allowed Fompton to steer him out then without protest, as these two were making their hasty exit. Lord Prepin shouted after them, and never referred to me as an imbecile again. Really, uncle, you must do something about the manner of your help. Lord Physiac told the two adventurers to prepare for their audience in Elevation on the morrow, and departed with Prepin dithering in his wake. All right, break. All right, so, boy, I mean, okay, as the story goes, and as some So yeah, there's a comment. There's hag blood in the Narondel noble lines here, or whatever a witch is, and that she is the Baroness of that Grim Malkinsham. What a name! You know, what a name there to get a mouthful right there. You know, Physiac's aware of this whole thing that's going on, and so she is. So Dulcia is Lady Dulcia, and Quodil is a baroness, and Physiac's rather happy to see a uniting between his area and the barony of Grimalkinsham. All right. Let's see. A Grimalkin, also called Greymalkin, is an archaic term for cat. A Malkin, an archaic term with several meanings, a low-class woman, a weakling, a mop, or a name derived from a hypocoristic form of the female name Maud. Scottish legends make reference to the Grimalkin as a fairy cat. That's, all right, that's very cool. I'm going to, you know, we have very little left in this, but I've learned better than try to force my way through. And as you can tell, I'm missing, having a little hard time finishing right here. So I'm going to end it for the night. And I guess on Halloween, I don't know if anybody can be on, but I'll do tomorrow night, and we will finish Revel in Realm Mord, and a very appropriate story to end on Halloween right here. So this has been one of the strangest, I honestly think this is so far the strangest story that I've read from Gygax. It is definitely bizarre. It's a little all over the place, and the reveals that are being thrown left and right are really, they're very, you know, it's a big surprise. There's so much that it just feels incomplete about this story, from the fact that we never really understand what the quest is. We don't know what they were expected to bring back, because they just bring back a note from Quodild, and then that's her barony there, and yet she doesn't seem to be fully human, or she's not human at all, and her daughter's only half human. So, you know,
it all seems like it was started with some petty squabble from grade school or something.
I know. And, with the funny thing, it's an enjoyable story. It is funny. You know, he does succeed again in writing something that it actually turns out that it is, it's kind of, expected. But at the same time, it turned out, I, in a sense, it's expected. I never would have imagined this story, you know, becoming what it has and becoming such a farce and all these reveals and such. It's, it's like he was watching the Marx Brothers or something. So it is got to be the strangest story that I've read. And we have now, I didn't remember it as being this weird. Now, there's another story coming up that I think is also going to be pretty weird, if I remember correctly. But this one has just, exceeded my expectations. Now, as far as the characters go, both Gord and Chert are going to be elevated now by the Nirondees. So I don't remember if they're ever honored in any other way. But in here, they're both not going to be commoners anymore.
They'll be gentlemen.
They will be gentlemen and esquires. So that is an interesting result. Now, we're not quite finished. There's about 12 or maybe even less pages left. I think there's about 12 pages left. So, but who knows how long that'll take. We might be a very short reading tomorrow, or it might be the full hour. Who knows? I'm pretty sure we will finish the story tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be on. I'm not sure when the
trick is going to start. Yeah, I know. It's Halloween. Yeah, it's going to be very strange. I don't know. I don't think there's going to be anything for me to, tie me down tomorrow night. But it was very strange. But yeah. So I'm gonna leave it for tonight, and we'll be and good evening and night for everyone. All right. Good night.